Excellent. Good. Well, we just wanted to introduce what we're going to be doing on Tuesday, really. So our plan originally was going to be to do a gathering together and talking to you all about our trip to Cambodia. But obviously that's not practical. So we're going to do something on Tuesday that I'll let you know about in a moment. But this is just a little taster. So remember January. It seems like a lifetime ago that David and I went on our volunteer trip to Cambodia with Mission Direct. And we just wanted to share some of it with you and also to say how much we appreciated the various forms of support that so many friends and family and church family gave us when we went on that trip before and during and indeed afterwards. So where is Cambodia? For those of you that are as bad at geography as I am, I never get the university challenge questions with the maps. This is where Cambodia is, and it's over 6,000 miles away from the UK and 7 hours ahead, which is quite challenging. And it was a 15-hour flight, which was fine. So we did manage to get there and back before any restrictions regarding coronavirus. So we were very fortunate. And but at the towards the end of our trip, we were really aware of the coronavirus threat and the concerns about it. So next slide, please, David. Cool. So this is our team. We went as a small team. I can't remember exactly how many there were. Obviously,
there were 13 of us.
13. This picture is our team in the playground of the school in the community where the building work took place. And I just really love the fact that there was this message on the playground wall. Every time I think of you, I give thanks to my God. So it's a good place to have your photo taken. So they're a mixture of builders and medics. And in terms of the team members, the youngest member was 18 and the oldest was in her late 70s. And in the medical team, there was me, a retired GP, plus two nurses. So you can see that in this photo, some of us aren't wearing team kit on this occasion because, and generally we were the medical team as we would have been doing something medical just before or after this.
I think actually the oldest was in her late 60s. Rather than 70s.
You're right. She's in her late 60s. It's good that I've got David correcting me.
And the youngest was 17. Wasn't Simon 18 while we were there?
That is true. He was.
And May was also 17. So
I think you should be doing this talk,
David. No, I'm just chipping in.
You're right. The youngest was 17 and she's just been 18. My apologies. So there are all sorts of aspects to the trip. And one of the main tasks was the building project. And the aim was to build some houses for families on the same site as the small church plus the school and in that local community. David was involved with the building. I was from time to time when I wasn't doing medical things. And they've been gradually redeveloping this sort of rather ramshackle area and making these lovely, lovely homes. And here are some before and after pictures. You can see that this family of five have just moved in. And that was a photo we got very recently. So two teams went out after us and alongside the local builders have finished this house for them to live in, which is brilliant. Before this, they were living in a very, very small space, effectively on the street just in front of this house. So it's fantastic to see what brilliant progress has been made and how their lives have been transformed. Could I have the next slide, David?
I'm going to show a video clip, I think, now, aren't I?
Oh, you are. Now, while David faffs around with the technology, there's a little time-lapse video coming up, we hope. And see if you can spot David. He is in the back right-hand corner wearing quite a big floppy hat. And you can see from time to time he moves into the front where he's in the shade. So you can't see him yet. You'll see him in a minute. Okay, here we go.
Is that working?
Yep.
This was a time-lapse taken over a period of about an hour. We got about 10 seconds of training in bricklaying and then basically got on with it. The bricks are not structural. They're used to kind of fill in the gaps between the concrete in the concrete structure. There you go.
Cool. Right. Let's get
going. Where am I going now? Here.
Running commentary essential.
Yeah.
So you know, David and the builders were building in temperatures in the late 30s with direct sunlight quite a lot of the time. So they could only do that for a short part of the day. Medical team worked more intensely than the building team, and because our timetable was absolutely packed. And this is just a slide showing a taste of some of the health promotion we did. There's a picture of me resuscitating Simon, a gap year medical student, which I did very frequently because resuscitation is something that in Cambodia they don't really, isn't embedded in their culture. You can see me showing what to do when a baby or child chokes, demonstrating with our doll Jenny. And the bottom picture is me being asked to see a child, one of the members of staff who wasn't very well. So those are the kind of things that I was doing, but there'll be more about that on Tuesday. Next slide, please, David. Okay, so we've got loads more to share with you on Tuesday, but we just wanted to leave you with a video of one of the projects we visited on our own when we were travelling after we did the trip. And this is about the hero rats that detect landmines and save so many lives. And we're getting really boring about this, but it is truly amazing. So,
excellent. Thank you, David and Paula. And if you want to join, it says quite simple to do. You can do that on Tuesday and find out a little bit more about what happened so long ago. Well, it wasn't that long ago, but it just seemed like a lifetime.
As Paula said, I'd really like to emphasise just how grateful we are for the support that we got from the church, not just in terms of financial stuff and things that people sent with us, but also in terms of the kind of ongoing prayer and WhatsApps and stuff that we got for people while we were there. So we'd really like to be able to share a bit more about what happened to us while we were there. So that'd be great.
Excellent. Well, I don't know whether in the week any of you knew that it was World Day at some point. Just like wave your hands if you knew it was World Day, Earth Day. A few of you. Okay. We did hearts with the earth on and things and, you know, a few little activities like that. But I found a reading in one of my books because it's easy to celebrate Earth Day, isn't it, when it's sunny and the trees look nice and it's wonderful and brilliant. And so we did that on Wednesday. But here I want to just read something to you. It says this: God's world is shining all around us. The skies, streams, trees, animals, without needing any words at all, are telling us God is powerful and wise and beautiful. But they can't tell us everything. They can't tell us the most important thing. They can't tell us about his love, his wonderful, never stopping, never giving up, unbreakable, always and forever love. The love that made the stars, that moved heaven and earth to be near us, that came down to live with us. No, to really see God's love, we must look at Jesus. And we're going to start a series today on the book of Hebrews, where the first passage we're looking at is the very fact that we're to look at Jesus to see what God is like. So we're going to begin by, well, you can sing on your own in your own house as we do our worship together, or you can listen. So now's the time in a moment to get your tape ready. Paula Mays is going to read the passage to us. I'm not going to mute everyone, so if everyone could remain quiet while Paula reads. And by the way, that will be an abiding memory of you and John singing and Morgan sitting in the middle of you with her fingers in her ears, which I found very amusing during that song. Paula's going to read from the book of Hebrews as we start to think about this passage.
So it's Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. Long ago, God spoke many times and in many ways to our ancestors through the prophets. But now in these final days, he has spoken to us through his Son. God promised everything to the Son as an inheritance, and through the Son, he made the universe and everything in it. The Son reflects God's own glory, and everything about him represents God exactly. He sustains the universe by the mighty power of God. After he died to cleanse us from the stain of sin, he sat down in the place of honour at the right hand of the majestic God of heaven. This shows that God's Son is far greater than the angels, just as the name God gave him is far greater than their names.
Thank you, Paula.
Different version.
Yeah, no, it's good. So, if you grab your piece of paper and whatever you've got to write with or draw with, then if you like to do something while you're listening, then the challenge today is to draw a self-portrait. Would you like to do that? And if you do that really quickly and you're really good at drawing a self-portrait and you're in a house with other people, you could then draw their portraits as well if you wanted. But the challenge while you're listening to me is to draw a self-portrait on the piece of paper that you have. So that's a picture of yourself, for those of you who don't know what a self-portrait is. As accurate as possible, use colours if you'd like, or just sketch it out for a self-portrait. I'm going to mute you all now so you can say what you like while you're listening to me.
Open your art box here.
Okay. So we're starting with the Book of Hebrews. And while you're doing your self-portraits, I want to take you back to the 1500s, if I may. I don't think any of you can remember this time in history, can you? 1500s? No, I don't think so. But I'm sure that you'll be aware of the story that I'm about to tell you. The year is 1539, and it's the year that Henry VIII is looking for a new queen. He's already been married three times, of course. He's been married to Catherine Parr, who he divorced, to Catherine Howard, who he had beheaded, and to Jane Seymour, who sadly died. And now he's looking for a new wife. And the story goes that he was advised to look to Germany, so through marriage they could build up strong relationships with the Germans. And the person suggested to him as being the one who he should marry was Anne of Cleves. Now, Henry knew nothing about Anne of Cleves. She was a German princess. That's about as much as he knew. He didn't know what she looked like, and he didn't know anything about her. So he commissioned a painter, Hans Holbein, not sure how you say his name, to visit and to paint Anne. But he also asked the painter to paint Anne's sister, just in case she was more beautiful than Anne, and he could choose which one he would marry. So the painter came back with two portraits, one of Anne and one of her sister. And Henry liked Anne's portrait. He thought that she was the most beautiful, the most suited for him as a wife. And so he called Anne over to England and declared that they would marry. However, when Henry saw Anne in the flesh, he was very disappointed. It seemed to Henry, at least, that Anne's portrait didn't match up to the real thing. And so they were only married for 6 months before he then started looking for yet another wife. Henry was believed to have said of Anne, when he saw her in the flesh, that she is nothing so fair as she has been reported. I feel that probably there's a little more to the story than that, and that actually Anne of Cleves has been treated harshly throughout history. But at least she kept her head, which is more than can be said for a couple of other of his wives. Now, of course, things have moved on since the 1500s, and people do tend to meet before they get married, in our culture at least. There are also photographs, which hold much more of a likeness than portraits. And there are, of course, video calls like this, Zoom, Skype, FaceTime. But it's still the suggestion that some of these don't always hold a true likeness to the person themselves. I found it really interesting over this time to look at celebrities online. They often doing, you know, singles, or they're doing something online to entertain people. And some of them still dress up and glam themselves up and look exactly like they do on telly. But others, they don't make so much of an effort because they're in their own home and they don't put all their makeup on. And they look completely different to what they look like when you see them when they're up on the telly in normal times. But even this little insight into people's lives doesn't always give us a true likeness of the real character. Because people, of course, can be very different from what they look like or how they seem in a 5-minute clip online. And you know, in a way, this is where the author of the Book of Hebrews begins, because he or she starts this amazing book which seeks to show the supremacy of Jesus Christ and calls us as followers to persevere as we live our lives for him. They begin this book by talking about the many sketches, the many photos, the many portraits, the many pictures, if you like, that the people of Israel have received from God throughout history to show what he was like. It says, as Paula read right at the beginning of this book, that in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. Or if you like, in the past, God spoke through many different means. He spoke through people. He spoke through situations. He spoke through mighty acts over years and years and years to give his people a picture of what he was like. For instance, he spoke through Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, as well as Hosea and Joel and Amos and Obadiah, to mention a few prophets in the Old Testament who brought the word of God to his people. And he also spoke through kings and judges and rulers and queens. He spoke through amazing acts of power, through the burning bush, through the parting of the Red Sea, through the walls of Jericho falling, through the still small voice to Elijah. He spoke through dreams and visions to Joseph and Daniel and others. He spoke at many times and in various ways, creating for Israel and for us in the Old Testament pictures, snapshots and sketches of his character, so that people could catch a glimpse of what God was like and how he would act. But these glimpses, of course, didn't always hold the full picture. These prophets and Acts couldn't possibly give an accurate picture of what God's true character was like completely. They were simply snippets. They were a portrait, if you like, of the real thing. And so now the author to the Hebrews tells the readers that in these last days, God has spoken to us by his Son. And not just any Son, but the one and only Son, the Son of God, who is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. Or if you like, now God has spoken through someone who is much better than a portrait, someone who is exactly the same as him. So we can get the whole picture of God, not just a sketch or a photo or a snippet here and there, but the whole picture of what God is like with no hidden surprises. It's a bit like when an emperor in ancient times used to rule over a vast area of land. And of course, the emperor couldn't be in each part of that land all at the same time. He couldn't visit it regularly even because it was such a vast area. And so what he used to do to remind people that he was there and who he was, well, he would create images of himself, but he would also employ an engraver to make a metal stamp of a picture of him. And then the words that around the edge that described what he was like. And then that stamp would be used to make coins, so that the coins held the exact replica of the original stamp. And those coins, of course, would be used throughout the kingdom so people would remember what the emperor was like, both in word and picture. And this, in a way, is what the author is saying about the arrival of Jesus, that he is the exact representation of God. Or as the Message Bible puts it, this Son perfectly mirrors God and is stamped with God's nature. Jesus is God come to earth to show us what he is truly like. And when we look at Jesus, when we look at the Son who came from the Father, what an amazing picture we get. Because when we look at Jesus, what we see is truly amazing. What we see is a God like no other. Because when we look at Jesus, we see a God who first and foremost is compassionate. We look at how Jesus treated people and the way he was. We see a God who was loving, who is gracious, who is welcoming, who is accepting. What we see is a God who forgives people freely. A God who sacrifices willingly, a God who was willing to die that we might live. What we see is one who heals and restores and redeems, the one who reaches out to those on the edges of society and who specifically welcomes those who others have ignored and ostracized and blamed and persecuted. What we see is a God who truly loves the world and every single person in it. And what's more, a God who did not come to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. You see, the picture we see when we look at Jesus is truly amazing, better than any Monet or Constable or Banksy that we might ever have seen. But also it is more powerful than anything we could know too. Because this Jesus, this Son of God, this exact representation of Almighty God himself, is also the one who created the universe. He didn't suddenly appear after God had done all the work of creating, but Jesus was there in the beginning creating the universe. He's the one who holds it all together every day. He's the one who will one day bring it to perfection, and the one who right now at this very moment reigns supreme at the right hand of God, the place of greatest honour and power. And so when we look at this complete picture, we know that we've been given an image of God that is real, that is true. And we can keep coming back to Jesus to remember what God is really like. Because, you know, to be honest, sometimes we forget, especially in and amongst the corona-related news of our times that's always pushed at us every day. Sometimes we forget how amazing and how powerful and how loving and how gracious God really is. Sometimes over the time that we think of God, we even add a little to his character. You know, change him a little in our minds. Maybe we make him more judgmental and decisive because that's what we want him to be like. Or maybe we sometimes take things away from God in our minds so he becomes more cuddly and familiar because that's what we want. Or maybe we just piece together lots of different things and create our own picture altogether, which can be so far from the truth it's almost laughable. And when we do this, we sort of begin to treat Jesus a bit like a portrait again rather than the full picture of God. It's like when you can't quite afford a Burberry handbag, so you buy a Burberry instead, and you think, oh, that'll do. It looks very similar, but it's not quite the original. Or you go and buy a CatCot instead of a Kit Kat, or maybe you will get a packet of Prongles instead of a packet of Pringles, or a cheap tube of OK, but it's not in reality like Olay. They're cheap. They're close to the original, but they're not quite right. And, you know, sometimes we can do this with Jesus. But when we do, we catch a rather wonky glimpse of what God is like, and we don't actually get the real picture. In fact, we fall far, far short, filling in the gaps with our own made-up images. Whereas here in the book of Hebrews, we are told and reminded that we have the real picture. We don't have to search and hunt for what God is like, because Jesus is God. No changes, no missing pieces, no additions, but God in all his fullness. Which in a time like today, when it's easy to question the power of God in relation to the power of a virus, is so good to remember. That in a time when it's easy to join the blame game about this virus and all the problems it highlights, and when some are calling the virus God's judgment and others are calling God impotent in this world of suffering and pain, we can actually look at Jesus and we can know that God is a God of compassion, and that he does care, and that he can do things. So that in a time when we are tempted to cave into fear and doubt and all the other emotions that swirl around our head from day to day and become fixated on the one thing that the press wants us to fixate on, we can instead turn to the one who holds our lives in his hands and know without a shadow of a doubt, because we see it in Jesus, that he cares. And not only does he care, but it is by his power and his power alone that we wake up each day, that we take a breath, and that we live again under his wonderful care. I've unmuted you, just to let you know. And I wondered whether you'd created any wonderful portraits that you wanted to hold up, and whether they're anything like the real thing.
Not really.
Excellent. Yes, it's good to have a look around.
That's Lydia.
I'm presuming that's Heather rather than Robin. Excellent.
There are two. So this one is Heather.
Yeah.
The other one is me, I think.
Excellent. Do you think people would recognise you from your portrait?
I've done a current haircut rather than.
It's very hard to recognise people even from the best pictures. We don't get the full character. Now, in a moment, we're going to go to a time of communion. I'm just going to mute you, not because I don't want to hear from you, but. I don't. No, joking. We're going to go into a time of communion. We're going to bring ourselves before God together, eat and drink. But I wanted to read, first of all, from the book of Colossians, which sort of sums up what I've said. I could have just read this because it's wonderful. It says this, Colossians 1, 15 to 20. We look at this sun and see the God who cannot be seen. We look at this sun and see God's original purpose in everything created. For everything, absolutely everything, above and below, visible and invisible, rank after rank after rank of angels, everything got started in him and finds its purpose in him. He was there before any of it came into existence and holds it all together right up to this moment. And when it comes to the church, he organizes and holds it together like a head does a body. He was supreme in the beginning, and leading the resurrection parade, he is supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything, everyone. So spacious is he, so roomy, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death that poured down from the cross. And I think it's wonderful. I especially like the bit which talks about all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe coming together to be fixed and pulled into a wonderful harmony in God. The jumping and the skipping and missing words was done deliberate so you could fill bits in yourself. I hope you all managed to do that. No, we gather together and we eat and drink. And we remember Jesus' words on the cross when he said, "It is finished." Not, "I've done it, okay, that's it," but "it is finished." Everything has happened that should have happened. Death has been broken. New life has come. The curtain in the temple has been torn in two, and access to God is freely available to all at all times forever.